Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of History After Hours. My name is Kevin Pumphrey, and with me, like normal, is Mr. Ron Franklin and Mr. Jeremy Nixon. We are three history teachers at Lakeside High School, and we are live at Collective Coffee again. The date is October the 5th, and the kids ask a lot of great questions. And so, just like normal, we had a great time. So with that, we hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay, this is another edition of History After Hours. We're live at Collective Coffee, and we got a bunch of students looking at us, ready to ask some questions, I'm sure, that are going to be life-changing. Start with your first question.
All right, here we go.
My name is Joshua Weed, and my question is, if you could change your decision about one major life decision, which one would you change?
If I could turn back time. Sorry, that is a dated song.
Cher.
Oh, okay. Not that bad. She's still alive.
Yep, hanging on.
One decision that you could change in our lives or in somebody else's life?
In your life.
I'm telling you, this broken something to y'all. So.
Wow, okay.
You change one decision, though, and then you got the butterfly effect.
Yeah, it could avalanche on you if you're not careful.
We could be poor in a gutter just by, you know.
I'll make a vague statement, even though you asked something specific. I think that I would be more selective about who I chose to associate with when I was younger. Although, like Humphrey was saying, you learn lessons from that, right? So there were some people that I was with that probably weren't, together. We didn't, we weren't always as solid citizens as we should have been. I don't know how to delicately say that. We teenage goofballs, basically, and you go off and you do stupid things. So, that's probably what I would say to begin with. But it helps me make me who I am now, because I see those life lessons that I learned from those experiences and those mistakes, and then you move forward. So I don't know. Like, that's tough. Any ideas?
Yeah. I mean, if you survive,
yes.
And generally speaking, even the worst things that happen to people, like they got cancer and they recovered, if you say, hey, would you like to go back and wish you never got cancer? Most of them will say no. You know, I really appreciate more now. I'm so thankful for this and this. I learned this. You know, like, so if you survive it, it's hard to change one thing.
Yeah, as far as major life decisions go, there's not anything that I look back with regret and go, man, I wish I would have just absolutely changed that or done that differently.
Maybe the real baggy pants in the 90s.
Oh, that was
bad. I could
do
without those, but I learned a valuable lesson. You can drop kick someone in the face if your pants are baggy enough. You can't do that in skinny jeans.
So like a Jean-Claude Van Damme reference?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That's tough, Josh, because, you know, you do the best you can at the time when you think that, you know, or sometimes you don't think, as the case would be that I was talking about when we were younger. Sometimes we just were like, let's drive real fast and go right here and let's see what happens. You know, sometimes you just do stupid things like that. And sometimes it's fun, and sometimes you go, dang, we should not have done that.
Also, if you go back to a certain decision that you kind of regret, being who you were then, you'd make the same decision. Like, that's the decision you made because that's who you were at that moment. And I don't know that you could have made another decision sometimes. Like, that's just who you were.
All right. So. No, okay. I do have one, and I'll be specific. And I'm going to tell on myself, and I hesitated to tell the story, but here you go. Back to the driving fast thing. I was with a group of friends, and we were goofing off, and I was driving way too fast down Malvern Avenue past the school. And when I was finally pulled over, the officer was not pleased. And I said some stupid things to him, and my mama had to come get me. That was dumb. I wish I could change that. But going back to what I said a while ago, I learned a lesson.
Did you say, I can't drive 55?
I did not say that. Okay. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, don't say that.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. So anyway, that, you know, I would have been less that guy and more positive.
Next.
My name is Clint Cox, and if there was one law you could change, what would it be and why?
We're not writing your Judy paper.
I already wrote my paper. I'm just asking.
Oh, is this for?
Yeah, this is for Judy.
I've already done my paper.
Yeah.
I was just wondering.
Change one law.
I don't know that. There's not a law that comes to mind. If I could. I mean, there are, but more importantly for me, I would change one Supreme Court decision, and Citizens United, money is not speech. But
that's a pretty good one.
That would be a good. Yeah. I think that would be a great decision to change. Citizens United. If you don't know, look it up. It has added some turmoil
and division to politics. And, you know, it cost $1 billion now to be president. So when your parents go, one day you could be president.
No.
Just look back and go, probably not, unless you've got $1 billion.
Yeah, we just talked about that today in Gov. The last election cycle was $10 billion. And that's in money that's actually traceable. It doesn't count dark money. So
$10 billion?
Yeah.
$10 billion.
Spent between soft money, hard money, and then,
wow. Yeah, I'm never going to be president.
All right, good question.
Cool. All right, thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Claire Hudnall. And so I think we've seen over the years that the Supreme Court is used more and more as a political tool. How do you think we can decrease the politicalization of the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, ask us a hard one, Claire. you know, the way it's set up now, I think we're off the deep end. It's a constitutional amendment or nothing. It's limiting government, limiting the terms of the Supreme Court to not life tenure. It may be an age cutoff or restriction. It might be going to a civil service, like a pool of applicants that are qualified and referred by judicial counsel, like Nigeria does.
Do you think that the Senate approval is still a good idea, or is there other ways to pick these people?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the whole system. It's the checks and it's the balances. But, you know, the Senate... I mean,
could you expand that out to something more than the Senate itself?
I mean, you might be able to go full House and Senate,
that would be a circus.
You know, I use this example all the time, and my Gov kids already know what I'm going to say. It's that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of the most liberal justices in history, was confirmed 96-3 in the 1990s, and now it's partisan lines only. The only question we used to ask is, are you qualified to sit on the Supreme Court? And now it's, do you believe the way I believe?
When do you think that changed?
Well, you know, Bush versus Gore.
Gingrich.
you're always going to say Newt. I'm always going to say Bush versus Gore. That's where it goes.
But I think it all leads to the same road of...
All right, well, what about the idea about transparency and rules of ethics that can be applied to them? Isn't that another check or an imbalance on who they are and what they do?
Yes, and there is a bill being considered, and I very much hope that it passes.
That's probably it, yeah. Okay, thank you. Good. All right, Hill.
My name is Mason McElrath, and I was wondering if by some miracle our founding fathers came back to life today, do you think they would be proud or ashamed of the nation we've become?
They'd probably be impressed with the size of the country.
I think they'd be shocked. They'd be shocked about air conditioning.
So, right. They would die again.
The list shot of things they'd be.
What's this magic?
So it depends on what you want to show them. But if you described our federal government, they'd be shocked by the power of the president. Because they specifically designed the thing to have the legislative branch kind of dominate. And we have seen really for decades the legislative branch kick the power to the executive branch. So they would look at the size of our military imperialism and the power of the president. And I think they would be like, wow, y'all have let this get out of hand. But you would know more than me.
Well, I mean, you've been taught your entire life that we were founded with three co-equal branches of government. No, we were not. It was written to be the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the weakest be the judicial branch. And all of that has turned on its head. The legislative power has been given away not only to the Congress, but to the courts as well in a lot of ways. So I think they would be stunned. It wouldn't be recognizable to them.
I would think they would be stunned by our weaponry. And they would probably reconsider their stance on the Second Amendment. That may be a controversial statement of mine, but I think that they, because the weaponry of that day was so archaic compared to what we have now and the things that are available to the general public and the concept of a well-maintained militia, that's not saying that there should be civilian armies. That's not what that says. I think they would be worried considering what we have and how they wrote that and how it's been interpreted. I think that would be a controversial point for them.
Here's the other side. I wonder if they would be completely floored that we're the most powerful country in the world.
Oh, maybe.
Basically, republics have spread across the world when we were the only one, and now there's hundreds of republic-type countries. And they'd be like, wow, what we did worked so well that it's around the world now. And it's led to the crippling of dictators. And I mean, obviously we have them rise up and fall and stuff, but they would be shocked.
The general fall of the monarchies across the world.
The monarchies have fallen. Republican form of government has spread. Yeah.
But maybe. It's also most likely to fail. We're the anomaly, statistically.
Maybe. Yep. All right.
Cool.
Good.
Hi, my name is Frankie Colgrove, and my question is, how do you think other countries view us since we have such a big influence over the world when we can't even get things right here, like when we oust our own speaker or we can't even decide simple legislation?
This is why we travel, because we get to ask these questions to people in other countries. And we do have law. They know all about us, by the way. We know nothing about other countries. I don't know if you've noticed that, but we are so huge and we kind of dominate culture in the world. So you know a lot about us, probably, hopefully, American history. But we don't know very much about other countries, but they do know a lot about us. So even if you travel around the world, they know all about us. And yeah, they have the same concerns we do, because as the United States goes, so do most countries around the world. So they're very concerned about our division and some of the crazy stuff that happens over here.
It also depends on who you ask and which area of the world we're talking about. So if we're talking about Western Europe as opposed to Central or Eastern Europe, the answer is going to be different. If you ask somebody in North Africa compared to East or West Africa or different parts of Asia, the difference between the answer in Japan versus the answer in China or the answer in North Korea, you see what I'm saying? Like, there would be very different takes on who they think we are and how we've been promoting ourselves maybe to them, or the potential rise in conflicts that we position ourselves to try to stop them from doing certain things. I mean, you have to be more specific if we want to give you a more definitive answer. We do have allies and we have friends around the world who really appreciate what we do and what we do for them constantly, not just as far as like friendship and trade, but also for protection. I mean, we have a big military and we flex that muscle quite a bit because we're trying to keep people within our sphere of influence so that we can promote democracy and republicanism. And I mean that in a term of like forming a republic that represents our people. But then you also have people who are very much dictatorially minded, who want to have tight controls over their people. And we've seen that really a challenge. Not, you know, in the Cold War, it was Soviet Union. But now we would say it would be like, well, maybe Russia again. But, you know, China, for example, and allies with them, they're actually drawing people away from our influence right now. So they definitely see us as their major challenge. Is that going to succeed for them? We'll see. So yep. Do they appreciate who we are? Probably not.
A lot of countries, I know y'all hear the negative stuff, so America should get out of everybody's business, but a lot of countries really love the fact that we're there, our military's there. I mean, I'm sure that Ukraine is pretty appreciative of the United States being on the scene. It is, that's a lot of the European countries, of course, that we travel to, because I've been to Germany and Poland, and when we did that, like, they were very appreciative. They had a very positive view of the United States, even in 2017 when things were chaotic here. So we do lose fact of the good that we do around the world, even though there's plenty to criticize as well.
You know, I'll throw this in here too, Frankie, wherever you went. Our quote-unquote chaos is not nearly as chaotic as you think when you look at a global scale. Like, we've had, there's some bitterness here, that's true. And we've had, I mean, January 6th aside, let's just cage that for a second and talk about just the general discourse or the disapproving discourse that we have through. That's really kind of tame compared to some other people and how they monitor even their own sort of republic standards. Like, fist fights in South Korean government happen more often than you might think. So, you know, we talk a lot of trash, but generally speaking, at the end of the day, they're going to make some sort of deal behind the scenes. They might not publicize that, but they're going to come to some sort of consensus. You know, like when they were going through the Speaker of the House thing, when they were trying to elect McCarthy, right?
Yeah.
And the cameras were rolling. I think you've talked about this maybe. Uh-huh. All these people who, when they go on the news, they're such slash and burn kind of people. We hate these guys. We hate these guys. Never trust them. Never trust that. But if you watch the cameras, if you go back and look at that video, they're laughing and joking and they're like shaking hands and, hey, how you been? And then they come to the vote. But, you know, that was behind the scenes that you don't generally get to view that part. They're much more on the same page than you think they are. You've got some loud mouths in each party that really sort of drive the division or the seeming division. But really, this is my opinion, but I think a lot of that is theater so that they can gain votes and therefore raise money for campaigns and blah, 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 blah. So I don't think it's as bitter as you're led to believe, at least not as constant as you're led to believe.
Yeah, and just a little plug for our tour. We're going to Ireland, North Ireland, and Scotland. It's going to be interesting to talk to the people in Ireland and Dublin.
And then North Ireland.
And then North Ireland. Ooh. And kind of see how they view the world, how they view us, how they view England. So that's going to be fun. So you should go on our trip and ask them yourself. All right, next question.
Hey, my name is Peja Eric, and I want to know if the teacher crisis is as bad as studies show, and if it is, when can we see something like that take effect?
Well, okay, be specific. What teacher crisis are you referring to? Which teacher crisis are you referring to?
Hiring teachers at schools.
Hiring, okay. Is it as bad as it seems? You know, there are fewer people, not just in the state, but fewer people nationwide choosing to go into education, choosing to go down this path. And I don't know how, if that's going to reverse or if it even, I mean, I don't know. That's a weird thing. I will say this. When I interviewed for my job at Lakeside, this is just the example. I know it's anecdotal, but still. I was one of, I want to say 50-something people that applied for the job. And I was one of about 12 who actually got interviewed. When I sat on the hiring committee for, actually, we sat on for both of you guys. There were dozens of applicants as well.
Yes.
The last person that we hired just for the history department, we interviewed three people out of about
seven
applicants that were just on the table. So it's that even that, and listen, Lakeside is a popular place for people to come and work. Generally speaking, like we pay pretty well, and we're you know, we've got good facilities and we got good parental support in the communities around us. And the administration is pretty solid. And so there's a lot of things that would draw people to us. But for us to not be able to have a large pool of applicants for the needs that we have to fulfill, like that's kind of a weird sign to me. And I'm sure it's even harder for smaller schools in very poor parts of the state or around the nation, whatever, who can't necessarily. Well, of course, now with the Learns Act, everybody's being paid the same. But that doesn't mean that that's not the only thing. It's not just money, although in some cases it has been part of the problem.
Well, and some schools have had to get a waiver and so that they don't have to pay that. And, of course, that hurts their chances of getting a teacher because you're going to have to be hired in less than what other people in the state are making.
When people ask me, is teaching a good career? My first question, it depends on the school. That's just it. I've taught at several different schools. Lakeside is one of the best. It's the best school that I've taught at. And, yeah, you could put me in another school and I would hate my job. But at Lakeside, I love my job. So if you do want to go into education, that's something to think about because not all schools are created equally.
Did you, when you were going through your education programs, getting your licensure and everything, are you aware of people, this happened to me, people who went through the entire program with me who did their interim when they did their, what they used to call practice teaching, when they did their practicum, and they got into a specific school, I won't name names, but decided that this is not what I thought it was going to be. I can't handle it. And they just either they just chose not to go into education based on that experience, or they only lasted a year or two. So there's that, to add to your question, like there's that crisis too. You get people who are getting in, but don't stay in because, and again, there's a myriad of factors that go on there, but how do we change that? How do we turn that tide? A lot of people are getting out because they don't feel appreciated. A lot of people are getting out because they feel that politicians are out to get them. A lot of people are getting out because they don't feel that there is enough general support from the community, or that somehow we've become the villains. We're trying to help you not be stupid. You know, I mean, that's really our goal, to stamp out ignorance. And yet for some, and this is where we politicize this, when you start to say, oh, they're indoctrinating you, or they're trying to change what you think, or they're trying to go down this path, like nobody's, none of us especially, are trying to, and nobody I know, by the way, is trying to change who you are or what you feel. The only thing we're trying to actually change is your level of intelligence and your ability to work your way through problems. Now, if the communities turn against us because of that, like, I don't know that there's a future for education in this state or around the country. There has to be in some form or fashion, but I think that the future may be, if I go down that dark path, it may be corporate controlled or in private entities. You know, and that's not the same thing as public education. It's really not. I hope that's not the way that goes, but it's the trend right now.
Yeah. Next question.
My name is Mason Matone. My question is, what is something that my generation should do or could change to better society?
Vote. I think that's what I feel from what I see from you guys and the ones that are just kind of below and above you. Like there's this activism, and I mean that in a very positive way. Like we want to be involved, we want to have our voices heard, we want to try to change things for the better. And you have maybe your own vision on how that works. So maybe more of that, and not be blindsided by people who want to persuade you based on their political agendas. Like really have an open mind about what your intake of information should be, filter those out and get rid of the nonsense. And I think that you guys have more of a social conscience than other groups that we've seen in the past.
But what I would say to add on to that is, look, 2020 had the highest presidential turnout for voters in over 100 years, and it was at 67%. And that's good. That's better. But when you start looking at state elections, when you start looking at local elections, there are more people who are registered to vote who choose not to vote. And that is where the problem truly is. Because if you're not getting involved and you're not getting out and you're one of the majority of people who don't care enough about change to make change, it won't ever change.
Well, the other side of that too is if you don't get involved, if you don't help make decisions in your life, things that you value, or, and, you know, or you have conversations about a shared value amongst the society that you're going to inherit, like somebody's going to make those decisions for you. Yeah, either you get involved and you help to guide and to govern, or you are governed and it may not go the way that you think. And so sitting back and being quiet is, I mean, it may be more comfortable for some folks. It is a stretch to get yourself out there, especially as a young person, perhaps. But even in this age before you can vote, you can still be involved in the process. You can still be involved in, okay, and I know you don't like Taylor Swift, but think about how many people Taylor Swift just registered to vote. Just that simple act of her going out and saying that we need to get people involved. And people responded by the thousands. Yeah, if I read that report right.
Yeah, I think 35,000, something like that.
35,000 people in just a matter of a day or so that she registered or she encouraged to go vote, and they responded. So, you know, you don't have to be Taylor Swift to make that kind of impact. You could do that on a daily basis around your friends. We should be involved. We should have discussions. We should seek out truth and justice in the American way, you know?
I would just say also be good parents when you become parents. I think that's important. Raise a generation that respects their elders, that tries to do what's right, that tries to learn, has curiosity, has an open mind. Yeah, raise good humans, I think, would be also a good way to, you know, give back to society.
We need that on a t-shirt. Raise good humans. Yeah. Yeah. That's our motto moving forward.
Okay, excellent. Next question.
Pope Francis opened a big meeting Wednesday on the future of the Catholic Church, where continuous topics would be discussed. Many ideas were discussed, but out of all, I feel the biggest change was the blessings Pope Francis has given to the same-sex marriages and opening Catholicism to the LGBT community. How do you think this change will impact the views of Catholicism?
Okay, let's back up just a teeny bit there. He didn't actually give blessings. He suggested that there was a chance that the church could give blessings. That's not the same thing. So I just want to start with that basic clarification. But how do we think that if they do go down that path, is that your question? If they do just that very specific thing, how would that change Catholicism?
Well, he's trying to keep the institution modern, because if you look at statistics, it's declining in popularity, it's declining in attendance, as many other faiths are.
Though.
No, that's what I was about to say. Yeah, as many faiths are, the world is becoming a more secular place, and I think he realizes that and is attempting to. And what he, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth or anything, but I think in a modernization sort of way. I mean, it's up to the individual how they decide to react to it. I mean, you know, the division in the Methodist Church is what's coming to mind at the moment. But, you know, I think for the long term, organized religions have to be aware of changing sentiments themselves and figure out how to respond.
Institutions have to survive, and since you brought up the thing with the Methodist Church right now, we actually have some friends who are in the middle of that process because they're Methodists in their church. Basically, if you don't know that story, the Methodist Church in the United States is basically splitting itself into two different pieces based on what you just said, like the recognition of same-sex marriage and or LGBTQ members actually getting involved in leading congregations, becoming clergy members themselves. So that's an interesting moment. Some are very sort of more open-minded and progressive. The others are like, no, staunch traditionalists, and how dare you? And they decided they just can't be in the same quote-unquote faith anymore. So will that happen with Catholicism? I mean, it's a possibility. I know some very, very conservative Catholics who don't even like Pope Francis just for the simple fact that he's much more sort of open-minded in his general statements, not like an official papal bull or anything like that, but the idea that he's reached out to certain individuals and tried to say the church isn't here to keep you from becoming a member of the faith. We are here to try to reach out as many people as we can, which was the original concept of Catholicism to begin with, by the way, the universal idea that anybody could come to the faith, regardless of your background or whatever. So, you know, does it circle back around? I really think that it could cause some strong divisions within inside the faith. I'd have to ask some people to see, but it could, yeah, very well.
I mean, yeah, religion, we could make a list of all the changes that have happened. It wasn't that long ago when the Catholic Church basically okayed contraceptives, which they didn't, and that was controversial at that time, but a lot of people in Africa were dying of AIDS, and they had a lot of pressure on them to say that contraception was okay, and that was a huge controversial thing, and many people thought that was going too far. I think you could take any specific issue. It always goes back to the church and how they react to it. how individuals react to it, and it doesn't matter the faith, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Muslim.
But back to my point, if you're going to survive as an institution, whether it's religious or any other way, like you're going to have people who feel associated with your particular program or plan, and if you are isolating more and more of the population, right, because people are more open about who they are.
Yeah, if we started burning witches again, I think that would isolate some folks from a specific religious belief.
Well, what have you heard?
Salem, you look into it. It's happened. All right, next question.
I'm Alejandro Robledo. So I just want to know, what is your favorite era of music?
90s.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
70s, 80s. Yeah.
That it?
Yeah.
20s.
Hey, I love that song. That's a great song.
I mean, that's my go-to music choice, 70s and 80s kind of stuff. But you pick a genre with inside that, whether it's classic rock, hard rock, acid rock, rap, hip-hop, disco, salsa. I mean, whatever. There's so many. Actually, that's one of the things I like about that era, 70s and 80s, is that there's a very eclectic variety of styles that you could choose from. It's kind of like open format at that point. Anybody could now, but now even with like indie music and stuff, like I really appreciate some of the independent.
Yeah, the older you get, generally, I think you get more eclectic. Obviously, I'm in a band.
Yeah.
When we started our band, I wanted to play 90s rock. Nobody cared. The people that pay us are always in their 40s or 50s. We have been playing Mustang Sally and Brown Eyed Girl for 20 years, and it still gets requested at every show. So, you know, I've come to learn to appreciate the 60s and the 70s, and now the 80s. The 80s are coming around a little bit. Maybe before I die, 90s will be popular at clubs and places. But
what do you think the holdup is on people really like? Is it because you can't dance to a lot of 90s music?
Maybe that, yeah. I mean, unless we're doing like R&B and stuff, but like, punk and all that.
But you do have some, you grew up in the 90s, so there's a lot of sing-alongs there, but it's just not necessarily.
Sure, there's also a lot of anger in that music.
There's a lot of anger, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you got Friends in Low Places, you got Kurt Cobain, you got, yeah.
Alanis Morissette.
Boyz II Men. And,
yeah, right.
Yeah, the 90s were great. You missed it. All right, next question.
I'm Merrick Lukens. What is your go-to Monopoly piece?
I don't have one.
Car, which goes back to my story earlier.
I'm also the car.
What's the second piece?
Shoe.
Horse.
Shoe?
Who picks the shoe?
I don't even think I would pick the shoe, and I don't care.
Are you being funny or are you serious?
No, I'm either driving or I'm walking. I mean, car or shoe.
Okay, well,
it's my mode of transportation. Man,
ride
the dog? Get on a ship?
What's the piece nobody picks? The iron?
Oh, yeah.
There's an iron?
Yeah, there is.
There's an old school ironing.
Yeah.
Like an actual iron.
I might pick the iron over the shoe.
Once again, we walk.
I know, but
I'm going around the board.
Who wants to be a shoe?
Car, horse.
But there's no horse. There's a dog.
There's a guy on a horse.
Yeah. Okay.
What version of Monopoly? The real version. J.P. Morgan's version. I don't remember a guy on a horse. Anybody? There you go. No. We got no from the crowd.
Man, there's a horse.
1930s version.
Oh, my God.
Right. You're not thinking of Risk, are you?
There's a hat.
There's a hat.
There's a cowboy on a horse.
There's nothing for me unless the wind is blowing.
Am I stupid? It seems like I remember there being
a horse. I haven't played Monopoly in forever.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't even played it forever.
They've probably updated the pieces. We're probably thinking of the old version.
Cut me a break, dude. I'm old. I forget things. Don't bother me like that. Let me have my delusions. The horse. Okay.
I remember a horse.
Seems like.
All right. Next question. That's good. I like those questions.
Hi, my name is Jacob Moss, and nationwide, many school districts have begun switching to a 4-day school week. What are your thoughts about this, and what are the possible implications?
So longer 4 days. The days would be longer. I mean, I think that's a bad idea. You know, if nothing else, we might should shorten the day a little, get out some of the fluff. But like our attention span and our energy levels, you know, adding another couple hours, especially when, is that happening in the corporate world? I don't know. Not that we have to mimic that. I do think, this is going to be unpopular, but studies have shown year-round education with more frequent breaks is better. You know, when you come back to school and you have to learn how to write again, that's not good. And you have to spend 6 months remembering the math you forgot over the summer break, probably not good. So, you know, going 2 weeks and taking a week off and then going 2 weeks and taking a week off, it's just like lifting weights. That would be better than to work out hard for 6 weeks and then take 2 months off or whatever. But the 4-day week, where you still have the same breaks and your days are just longer. I don't see anything positive, really.
From a school standpoint,
transportation,
from the administrative standpoint, it's about money.
Right.
You don't have to pay those bus drivers. You don't have to pay that fuel. You don't have to run those routes, and you don't have to run the electricity for another day of the week. Yeah. So there's a savings element to that we need to discuss. But I agree with you. There are several schools in our vicinity who have gone to a 4-day week and not. And depending on who you ask, it kind of goes what I was talking about a while ago with the question about the countries and how they see us. There's an administrative answer. Oh, we love it. It's great. The kids are doing so well, and the teachers are so, because they get that third day off. And most of the people I'm talking to are like behind the scenes going, God dang, like this is killing me. It's a hard adjustment. I think it would be easier for students your age, but I think about the elementary kids who are going till 4 or 4:30, having started at 7:45. You put a kindergartner in there. My little granddaughter is 4 years old almost, and I try to think of her going to school for that amount of time. You're going to have to feed them again. They need another break. They're wiped out by the time you get to the end of the day, and that's not my opinion. Like I'm seeing that because I do know people, and we do have friends and family in other districts who are doing this, and it's rough, man. It's really rough on them. And what about the parents? I think about that too. On that fourth day, whichever day they choose not to go, on that fifth day where they don't go, like what do the parents do with those kids? Especially if you have small ones, like you got to have to pay daycare now to help those kids, or who's going to watch them? Or you have to take a day off? You have to miss work to make sure that you handle them and they're okay. I mean, there's all kinds of weird. Some kids come to school just to eat. Is the school providing lunches for those kids? Are they still providing some sort of support services for them if they need them? I mean, I think about those things too. Is it better in the safety and security aspect? But the money rules. The money is going to govern that, and I think more and more schools are going to go to it. We're not. That was something that Mr. Cook, I know he just retired, but he dedicated that idea and really pounded it to us that we're not doing that because of the things I just said. Because we want to make sure that kids are taken care of. We want to make sure that we're not going this extended day, which can just drive people into the ground. I mean, like I said, the older you get, probably the more you can handle that. But a lot of research says we couldn't even start school before 9 o'clock. Like, you would be better off if we could let you sleep in a little bit and then get there and start. But whatever. Like, I don't control things.
No, I mean, that about
would
covers
you, would it. You like it? I'm just curious. We never really talked about it. Would you guys like that?
I wouldn't. I mean, look, by
you would or would not?
I would not. Oh. By the sixth period, when I've taught 4 different subjects and I have to stop myself and ask what period it is and what I'm teaching, I can't do another one.
Yeah. Add one more.
I'm sure some of you have seen me. I stand in front of the Promethean board and go, what do I teach now?
Well, okay, here's the other side of that. You ready? Okay, so kids are getting home later too. You have less time at home with your family. You have less time for extracurricular activities. You have less time to do, if there's homework, you have less time to do that. Like, that's just an extra burden on you that way, too. If you are in extracurricular, like, think about how you're pushing that even later getting home. You know, if you happen to be, say there's a game or a concert or whatever it is you're doing or some event, like, you're putting extra pressure on the stuff that goes on outside of school, too. So, I don't know. I don't dig it, man. I don't think it's a good idea.
I would have been for it is if I had to still drive 45 minutes to school every day like I used to. Then I'd be fine with it. But, of course, now I wouldn't.
For the teachers, that they one of the ways that they sold it to somebody was that, well, you can get all your extra stuff done on that day off. You wouldn't have to take a day off to get certain things handled. You could get all your doctor's appointments. You get all your if you get your hair done, you can get that done on that day. Nobody works on Monday, and who wants to do that on Friday? So it's difficult. Like, sometimes people cannot get in to see their doctor. They cannot get in to see, you know, if I have appointments, people just aren't making those things. Or if they are doing that, like, so many people have tried to book that day because, like, you can't get in. It's not what it seems. Like, they're trying to sell that, but I just don't think it's a thing. I don't like it. Good question.
Next.
What's up? My name's Atticus
What's
Webb.
What's up?
I was wondering, Mr. Pumphrey, you said you were really into, like, 90s rock stuff, right? You like Weezer?
I do.
Thank you very much.
What's with these homies? Say it ain't so. If you want to destroy, my name is Jonas. I could keep going. All right, next.
I'm Teddy Hedley, and if you could learn one foreign language just like that, what would it be?
Most useful, Spanish.
Yeah. Spanish.
I think that would be the most useful for us.
If you know Spanish, I think you can bridge off to other things more easily too. right? So there's a lot of Latin-based languages that have some commonalities that way, you know, as the root. And so if you were to speak Spanish instantly, then you might be able to pick up some other things pretty quickly too. That always fascinates me. And they did not stress that on us when we were kids, by the way. Well, oh, you're going to take this. You're going to take a foreign language. But really, they didn't try to teach us that foreign language. Honestly, they should have started when we were in elementary school if they were really going to hit it when we're really, you know, able to sponge and absorb things much more quickly.
Another thing about traveling, we interact with people in other countries and their children already know three languages.
That's what I was going to say.
By the time they're in fifth grade, we don't really start teaching them a foreign language till ninth grade. And by then, it's a little late.
We had a foreign exchange student from Serbia with us a few years ago, and chick knew like six languages. You know, she's your age. And I was like, how do you even do that? Well, she's like, well, they start us young. You know, it's just one of those things. We're so... Do you think it's because we're so broad as a country, but we have such a diverse population? You think that there would be more of that, but it's less actually.
Yeah, but we have to drive so far to get to another.
Well, I guess
like in Europe, we went to Greece in Italy, and we had a tour director who spoke British English and a wife who spoke, I guess, Greek, and they just decided to raise their baby speaking both, and the baby just became bilingual like that, and can just the baby just speaks whatever instantly. So like, but it's, you got to do it.
I worked with a woman when I was working at Hot Springs, and she her family's has German heritage, and her parents both spoke German fluently, but refused to teach it to her growing up because they came to the United States, or maybe it was grandparents who came and then they're here. But they're like, no, we're just not going to do that. We want you to be quote unquote American, and so you're going to learn English. And she, you know, was really sad about the fact that she couldn't speak her
ancestral language. Well, there's also some history with the Know Nothing Party and nativism in America that did look down upon people, you know, learn to speak English because we're American, which makes no sense. We're not American. Like, there's no language that's American.
Yeah.
We don't like the English, but we love their language. All right, next question.
My name's Colby Moore. I was wondering, if you had to live in the past, when and where would you live?
In the past?
Yes, in the past.
I would say September 2023, Hot Springs, Arkansas. That's as far back as I want to go. I mean, we get this question a lot, and it's just being history teachers, we know all the horrific stuff that's happened in the past. So if you go somewhere, you're probably instantly going to get tuberculosis consumption, as they say. You got to learn to live without air conditioning instantly. Like, if I could be in a bubble, an air-conditioned bubble, with, you know, endless amounts of food and, you know, and I didn't have to actually, and I couldn't get diseases, and, you know, it'd be cool to see the founding of the U.S. and, you know, the history stuff, but I don't want to take that risk of getting rickets.
Almost said 90s, but then I remembered dial-up.
I know. Get dirty.
Yeah. But I guess if I had, like, that's as far back as I'm willing to go.
I don't know. I have this nostalgia for our childhood growing up in the 70s. Like, we were pretty free little dudes, man. Like, our parents trusted that we were okay. We had a neighborhood that sort of watched itself, if you will, you know. There was a lot of kids about my same age, and we just sort of like gathered together and went and did things. You know, we were outside a lot. We rode our bikes. That was freedom. That was like the worst punishment. I would rather take a beating. Seriously, I would rather, like, please just smack me and get over with. Don't take my bike away from me, because that was like, that's, you know, that's how we interacted. That's how we got around. That's what we did stuff. But really, it was just a lot of, and like I said, maybe it's just me misremembering, because it's, you know, but it just seemed so much more simplistic growing up at that time. We didn't have a lot of the technological. It's good that you have certain amounts of technology, because you're much more able to know things that we didn't know, right? I remember asking my parents, like, so what happened here? And my parents were like, I don't know. Look it up. And if we couldn't look it up in an encyclopedia, and they weren't going to take me to the library. I think I've said this on the show before, but sometimes I've had my parents go, I guess we'll never know. And that was like a legitimate answer. We're like, well, I guess not. Maybe someday. So you have all of this cool access to information that we didn't have. But at the same time, I think you're bogged down with that too. You have to wade through and filter out so much more crap than we had to. It just seemed easier, I guess.
That's a crazy thing to think about. Your friends, you would get in an argument about what the name of a song or a movie. And at the end of it, you'd just be like, well, I guess we'll never know.
I don't know.
The world will never know.
There's no Google.
Yeah. So I guess if I was going to go back just for a moment, I wouldn't stay there, because I like being an adult. But, yeah.
Yeah, we're living in the best times, really. I mean, I know you don't see it. You see the worst stuff on the news. But just the amount of dead bodies you would have seen by this age would be crazy. The infant mortality rate. We could just go down the list of horrific stuff that's happened. We've come a long way. this is the best time to live. So I wouldn't want to go back, but I do appreciate the question. All right. Next question. We got 10 more minutes or so.
Hey, I'm River Cook. What do you think the greatest or most influential invention ever created is?
Printing press.
The wheel.
Oh, yeah, maybe the wheel.
Yeah, well, you don't get a...
Probably the wheel.
You can't have a printing press without a wheel.
Yeah, we just... Yeah. The problem is we don't know anything about that, the invention of that. It was invented so long, and at least the printing press, we know who did it, and it changed the world. Actually, the modern printing press from Europe, Gutenberg, even though China had it before, but it didn't affect the world like Gutenberg's.
I don't know. Discovery of gunpowder?
Also China.
Also yeah, China.
China.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are both strong. In the history of the world, though, which has more impact, printing press or gunpowder?
I just think the printing press has given us the modern. It led instantly, really, to the Renaissance and the Reformation and scientific revolution and enlightenment. And I mean, like everything we know about knowledge and science.
Yeah, but those who have gunpowder and those who don't, like, that's a game changer when you're looking about expanding your potential empire.
But those early guns, you know, some of those bows and arrows were better than like the 15th century.
I'll still blast your Constantinople walls to the ground and invade
you. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But at what point will the answer to that be the internet?
I know. That's
sure.
I think about that every time.
AI? Will that be the answer in the future? We'll have to ask AI and see.
ChatGPT will tell us.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're wrong, but I also think that I'm...
A close second to me also, and you could argue paper. The paper that was invented in 105 AD is the same paper we kind of use today. And the amount of the versatile nature of it, plus you need it for the printing press. So it's kind of chicken or egg.
All right. I'm Jack Krause, and I have three questions about two people. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. Who is crazier? Who is more corrupt? And who would win in a fist fight?
Well, that's...
I think they're both equally entertaining. You know?
Are you running for office?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
We have never seen politics quite this entertaining.
It shouldn't be this entertaining. It
really should be boring.
It's.
I don't know how to answer that question.
It's like a reality show sometimes, you know?
Well, I think since the internet has occurred, for a lot of people, it's become their sports. It's their team. And, you know, you're either for it or against it. We live in really unique times. I mean, I taught for 15 years. I never said that. I said, this is the way it usually happens. And then all of a sudden, things changed, and we've been in unique times.
Because they've been in arguments in Congress. Yeah, they've each other nasty names, and it's been like, bitch, this, and whatever. Like,
Marjorie got kicked out of the Freedom Caucus. So as far as I know, Lauren's still in it.
Okay.
So they do disagree, and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Of the Republican Party.
Yeah, she sort of.
It sort of depends on the weaponry. If we're talking about a battle royale,
she hitched her wagon to McCarthy.
Who's got the longer reach?
I'd like to clarify. I meant like a fist fight.
Okay. Well, right. So there. Yeah, back to what I'm saying.
Doesn't Marjorie Taylor Greene like train? Doesn't she do some sort of fighting? Yeah. She's so I'm gonna go there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she trains.
Oh.
I'll go her.
All right, what about,
I don't know.
Let's go,
what
Mitch
about
McConnell?
Lindsey Graham.
That's the real question. Let's get the octogenarians in the ring. That's more, you know.
Those are the ones with the power.
That might be more fun, actually.
First one,
they might have to lead them in the ring, and they're like, ready, go. And then they just kind of wander around. Isn't it crazy? Yeah. Baby boomers are still in charge.
Yeah. My gov classes are really not happy about it. I've heard it for like 2 or 3 weeks. We just skipped over it today when we got to the voting citizenry and who votes. Because they're still in power. They still vote. They still have an ironclad.
They refuse to retire.
Yeah, they refuse to retire. And you know, your generation is sick of it. Heck, my generation is sick of it. There's nothing we can do except vote.
My generation got skipped.
Yeah, Gen X never got a chance at power, and may not, because it may go just boomer millennial, because they've held on to power for so long.
Yeah, it probably will.
Yeah.
All right.
You say you want a revolution.
My name is Mary Lopez, and I was wondering whether Woodrow Wilson's decision to take the United States into war justified.
I mean, look, in the 20s and 30s, there was a lot of people saying it was a corporate war, it was a banker's war, they called it merchants of death. He said we're going to war to make the world safe for democracy, which is also a huge statement to say. We've never said that before. Democracy was not a positive term like it is today. We think of democracy, it's a good thing. If you said that in the 1800s, that's mobocracy. Nobody supported a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to switch it, and he was a progressive president, I mean, we had a lot of things occur. I think we were going to buckle up and get ready for war anyway. They're imperialist. We're pushing for war. And once we had a good excuse to go, we did it. We did have a very separate reason for war, but I do think it was about American interest. And I do also believe World War I is the worst war ever. I would rather fight, and if you had to put me back in history, I will ride alongside Genghis Khan. Put me in World War II, the storming of D-Day. I don't want to be anywhere near World War I because all of the death and destruction, it's modern technology versus old school tactics, the machine gun versus fighting in lines, and just bodies upon bodies. And for what? To fight another war one day. So
even Vietnam too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, the trench warfare. They didn't know anything about psychology, so you didn't do many tours.
Shell-shocked.
You just stayed there, shell-shocked. I mean, look, I think it was probably... It's so different because you just don't know what would have happened had Germany won that war.
Okay, so you're the American history guru. So how did Wilson... I don't know this part. How did Wilson turn that and sell it to the American people so that we were like... Or was it ever... Was it as, we must go and defend... The freedom after the Zimmerman thing or whatever, like, were we really that concerned about attacks? Were we really that threatened? Were we like, we all 100? What was the mood in the country when he decided to take us in? Like, I don't know.
Okay, so the Zimmerman note, I mean, affected people. They were mad at Germany. And look, we were putting up signs, don't go on into the Atlantic, and people were still going, and, you know, the Lusitania sank. But the Lusitania was 2 years before we went in the war. Unrestricted submarine warfare was kind of the excuse.
But did the mood actually change that dramatically where he felt confident enough to say, yep, we're going to pull that trigger now and let's go on? We had to build an army to go, right?
Yeah, we were not ready at all, but I think he saw politically he could get it done. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Woodrow Wilson can't send us to war. He has to ask Congress for a declaration of war.
Right.
So he waited till the politics were right where he could get it done. I don't think Woodrow Wilson wanted foreign policy to be his legacy. But, you know, whether we should have been in it or not, we ended up demonizing the Germans. But was it really their fault? You could look at other countries.
Hold on, clarify that. We didn't vilify the Germans. We tried to keep them from being vilified. But the French and the British were actually the French.
After the war, yeah.
Afterwards, yeah. Right. So, yeah, well, you had to because you're fighting against them at the beginning. Right. But afterwards, we're like, no.
Yeah, we had a whole propaganda campaign against, you know, once we got in that war, it was... propaganda. Mm-hmm. Let's demonize them. We got to get on the same team here. And you forget we have so many German Americans. So, yeah, is it justified? Looking back, it doesn't look like a good decision because it led straight to Germany rising back up.
What do you think would have happened if Germany had won the war?
I don't think there's a Hitler.
I don't think there's not a need for a Hitler.
And I don't think they're trying to take over the world.
So. Now, let me clarify that. A need for Hitler, that sounds weird. Germany would not have been seeking a savior.
Right.
If it hadn't been for the punishments after Versailles, the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah, it's a counterfactual. It's hard to tell what would have happened.
Yep.
So, cool. All right, we got time for just a couple more here.
Present day, who has the most important voice in politics?
Find important.
Most influential.
Like, who has the most persuasion?
You would like to say the president, but I don't think that's true.
No.
I mean, I think you have to separate it. Who has the most powerful Democratic voice for the Democratic Party and the liberal side of things? And then who has the most powerful conservative? And
yeah, I don't think there's a politician that speaks for America anymore.
I think Trump for the right.
Yeah.
He's still the number one favorite. Even though a lot of people on the right don't like him, I still think he has the most influential voice on the right. On the left, it gets a little bit more complicated.
They coalesce around Biden, but it's, you know...
Reluctantly, though.
Yeah, it's one of those they sort of have to because he is...
Right.
The leader of the party. I think you've seen a lot of Gavin Newsom lately. I think he hopes to be the next voice of the Democrats. There will be a lot of competition for that. And I think it'll range from like Kamala Harris to Pete Buttigieg to... there are some people I would like to see that are not, but that's a different question. But right now on the right, yeah, it's definitely Trump.
Yep.
All right.
We were thinking about this just real quick. It's weird to me to realize that Donald Trump, who seeks publicity, it's pretty obvious, and he's very open about that too. I want my name to be spoken about every day. Ever since he announced his candidacy in 2015, dude has been on the news every single day, multiple times a day. I don't know, is that a record? Is there anybody else you can think of that has been that media, right or left? has talked about that much that consistently.
He's a moneymaker.
That's a phenomenon. Man,
he makes so much money for
love him or hate him. That's impressive.
Late night shows, they all focus.
Maybe
on
FDR.
It's every day for like 7 years.
All right, last question.
Do you guys still think that there's a silent majority in the U.S.?
Is anybody silent in the U.S.?
When it goes back to the silent majority stands with kind of history, I do think that there is that contingent of people. Are they still a majority? I don't know. If they are, it's small, and I think it shrinks every year. But
do you think they're being replaced with a new version of that?
Well, I think the silent majority, they're not silent, but they're silent in the fact that most people don't vote. So the silent majority are people, they're yelling online, they're spreading propaganda, but when push comes to shove, they're just staying at home, not voting anyway. And that's a majority of Americans, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on. So that might be the silent majority we deal with.
All right, well, we appreciate all of the participation. Thanks for coming out. That's all the right show. Thanks for collecting coffee.
Yeah, we'll see y'all on the flip-flop. Goodbye.